Two.
That's right.
This is We Have Concerns. Hi, Jeff Cannata.
Hi, Anthony Carboni.
Hello, concerned citizens.
Anthony, this week we're gonna talk about attention span. So try to lock in, try to stay with us.
Never have, never will.
Yeah, I know.
The amount of medications I take to be able to lock in,
yeah.
And still, I wish one day, Jeff,
they'd work
here. Yes, I wish one day here, halfway through my life, that I would know the feeling of locking in.
Yeah, you'd
just
like
once.
To lock in just one time? Yeah.
Just one time.
Yeah.
People are always like, lock in, and I'm always like, you know, like when you tell a kid to do something they've never done before and they put on a serious face and pretend to do whatever an adult has done?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like when you're like, you know, you sit down and you're writing in cursive and your kid sits down next to you with a crayon and starts squiggling on paper and is like, look, daddy, I am also writing in cursive.
That's you locking in?
That's me locking in my entire life. Maybe one day I'll lock in. Hopefully, maybe today you'll tell me something that will help me lock in.
I hope so. This is going to be, I think this is a pretty interesting article. This was submitted on our Discord by Z Synergy Mansfield.
Head on over to that Discord if you dare. Patreon.com/WeHaveConcerns.
So cool. So many cool folks over there. So many cool articles. This article is on nature.com. Was written by David Adam, and it is a kind of a breakdown of the current state of attention span. Are you one of those people that thinks that in this modern age of ours, with our cellular telephones and our constant beepings and bloopings, that we're losing our attention spans that has been diminished in the last 20, 30 years?
I am somebody who believes that, there was this maybe about like 10, 15 years ago when the internet started really, really becoming a daily part, and social media and mobile phones started becoming a huge part of our lives. There's a book by Nicholas Carr called The Shallows, which was all about human attention span throughout history and now in sort of the age that we're in.
I like the song that book is based on. In the Shallows.
Is that Stars Born?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah, that's a Rocket Raccoon.
Rocket
one.
Raccoon sings that. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Jor-El.
Yeah. The conclusion that Nicholas Carr came to that I sort of believe in is that I think our attention span is probably unchanged, but we are being poked at while we are trying to pay attention, right? Like,
yeah.
It's not that we're not able to pay attention anymore. If you were able to get everyone and everything to just shut the fuck up for 5 minutes, you could probably pay attention just as well as anyone else throughout time.
Well, you've hit the nail on the head. This is what we're going to dive into. And this is, but you basically, said the whole thing.
All right. Well,
night,
thanks for listening. Guess what? I just locked in for the first time in my life.
Oh, you locked right in. Actually, you made it so you don't have to lock in. You're like, I said it. So now I can ignore the rest.
That's the trick. That's the trick. That's the true trick of the ADHD gifted child. Can I get around the work by getting to the conclusion?
Yeah. Let me just hop over this part and get right to the end. But I think the methodology here is interesting. First of all, most people, according to a 2021 survey, there is a large amount of people. Most people believe that our attention spans are diminished in recent times, and specifically the attention spans of young people. It's not so much that young people believe that, it's that old people believe that about young people.
Sure. Since the dawn of time.
Right, exactly.
Since the dawn, there was, in ancient Rome, there was a real worry that the written word was going to destroy people's brain.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I saw that going around on social media recently. It was a distraction that I got. But no, there's an article from, I don't even know what year, but, you know, early 20th century of, you know, saying, don't let your kids read before bed because it'll warp their minds. You know, it's my kids to read before bed.
Oh, no. If you read before bed, it just screws you up. The kids, it makes their mind race and it screws up their memories.
Yeah.
That's the thing is they genuinely believed, like back in the day, like, oh, you got to read to remember something.
Reading.
Shortcut. Yeah. Old Shortcut McGee over here.
Doesn't know
the oral history of our entire village going back thousands of years.
That's right. Yeah, you don't want to read before bed because it'll make you incapable of getting up and doing all the chores on the farm that you need to do. You know what I mean?
That's right. Are you telling me that you can't sing to me the song of our people? Yeah. That's literally the whole point.
It's more about labor. It's like, you know, don't fill your head with all these ideas. It'll get in the way of all that hard work we're expecting of the children.
Yeah, ew, gross. Yeah. They're thinking and not plowing.
Yeah. There is also a very famous 2015 marketing report that was done by Microsoft Canada.
Would you say it's the most famous 2015 marketing report?
It's always hard to rank your favorite 2015 marketing reports.
Out of all the 2015 marketing reports, is this the most important one? Is this the most famous one?
Hard to say.
I rank all of the marketing reports in 2015 from best to worst. Now, I'm a big fan of the original trilogy.
Sure.
You know, yeah. I put them right there at the top. I put the Microsoft marketing report on the feasibility of the e-reader.
Yeah.
I have the Microsoft marketing report on the future of digital gaming. And sure. Then I have the Microsoft marketing report on interfaces in the upcoming Windows 11.
Yeah,
those are my top three marketing reports.
Yeah, no,
in 2015 by Microsoft.
Hard to argue with that ranking. Oh, by the way,
do you like the Microsoft marketing report universe better or the Lord of the Rings cinematic universe better?
Well, you know, one is about the dangers of having, one item to rule them all. And the other is Lord of the Rings.
Hey, folks, you should come here for all your social commentary. Because we got it.
Oh, hey, by the way, if you want to hear us do a run, ladies and gentlemen, this is Microsoft Canada. Not just Microsoft, Microsoft Canada, which, of course, you know, Microsoft Canada. Made they didn't make the Xbox, they made the Xbox.
That's right. So what was their report about?
You know, Microsoft Canada, Anthony, they didn't make Copilot as their AI. They made Copolite.
That's right. And what was their process when they made it?
You know, Microsoft Canada, Anthony, Canada, they didn't make Windows XP. They made Windows X, please.
Give me one more.
Hey, Anthony, you know, Microsoft Canada didn't make Azure.
Mm.
They made Hoser. All right, I got one last one. One last one.
You know, Canada, round it out. Anthony, bring it home, baby.
Microsoft Canada, they didn't make their spreadsheet software isn't Excel.
No.
It's X hockey stick.
Excel.
It's a thinker.
X hockey stick.
Because a hockey stick looks like an L.
Oh, an almost historic run, I'd say. An almost historic run.
Anyway, this marketing report from 2015 claimed that the average human attention span fell from 12 seconds in the year 2000. Which is, you know.
That's where it started?
Our watermark. down to 8 seconds in 2013. And they claimed that was shorter than the goldfish's average attention span, which was reported to be 9 seconds.
Based on what?
And again,
all
of this is, as we like to say in the parlance of science, horseshit. Because
yeah, what would tell me the methodology of this? Where does the 12 seconds come from? Well, where does the 8 seconds come from? And where does the goldfish number come from? Microsoft's not running tests on goldfish.
Yeah, that goldfish thing is apocryphal because goldfish, there's absolutely no evidence that goldfish even have particularly short attention spans. In fact, there are some studies that show that goldfish retain information for months. So, you know, that whole thing about the goldfish is apocryphal.
I told you about my fish that I had once, Brienne of Tarth, who would do tricks and swim through hoops and stuff for me.
Yeah.
Did I tell you? I taught her all kinds of tricks.
Yeah.
Fish is smart, dog. Fish pay attention.
Unfortunately, she fell in love with that attractive guy who had sex with his sister and it all went downhill from there.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. It was an attractive fish. The incredible Mr. Limpet is who she fell in love with.
Anyway, this Microsoft Canada thing, they said they used surveys, filmed behavior, and EEG data. But basically, it's basically more about changing of habit than it is about people becoming less efficient. So there's a lot of this sort of prevalent misconception about the actual true science of attention span and how it is changing. You'll hear a lot of people say, oh, these devices in our pockets are changing our brains. They're changing our brains. But that's the question that this article is trying to get at is, are they actually changing our brains?
I think they are, but I don't think they're changing our brains in the way that everybody just assumes and says simply, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yes, having a device that pings every day, all day, turns you into a bit of a Pavlovian dog, right?
Yeah.
Where it pings and you look, because sometimes the ping is important. 85% of the time, the ping is not important. but yeah, you've got to be ready for that 15%. And I think that's less about attention span, and that's more about just sort of like our natural, wanting to be safe, wanting to be agile, wanting to respond to important things in our lives. And,
yeah,
you know, I don't know, like I think, underlying attention span of it all has always been something where I'm like, I don't know, that's just, you know me, I'll shove a scientist in the shoulder and say, prove it.
You love doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, every time I see two researchers walking down the street talking about their work on attention span, I go, hey, and I push him in the shoulder and I go, prove it.
Yeah.
Prove it, nerd.
They were probably on a date or something. They were probably like, you know, having a...
They don't have to be. They could just be coworkers.
That's true. But sometimes, you know, things can happen between coworkers.
Occasionally, I'm sure people are dating, but not, you know, yeah, you want to keep it professional as much as you can.
So a lot of what happens here, and you're describing this exactly, is that we conflate attention span with distraction. Mm-hmm. And the devices in our pockets are distraction machines, and distraction has been a problem far longer than the digital life has been. You know, then
it started a year before cell phones.
It did.
Everybody had great attention spans, and then year before cell phones, everything. You know what it was? Is it was the Lost finale.
That's what did it. Yeah.
That's what did it, is like nobody, before smartphones, everybody was like, cool. And then it was like, how are they going to get off that island? What's going to happen?
Yeah. Actually, you know, I was going to save this to the end, but I feel like it's appropriate now. There is a part of this article.
You know how they get off the island?
It's not great.
It's not great.
It's not great. There's a lot of that show that's excellent. That part, not so much.
I'd say there's a chunk of that show that's excellent, but we don't have time to. I wouldn't say a lot. I'd say a chunk.
Okay,
but
fair.
We don't need to get into it.
You're not going to get me to defend that show. That's not going to happen.
No, but we're also not going to say we can't be a 2006 podcast. We have other things to do.
I mean, we were. No, we weren't. We didn't. No. We were a little we were close, but we weren't quite 2000.
We were close.
All right. So should I tangent now or should I wait to the tangent later? I'm going to tangent now. The way this article starts on nature.com David Adam writing, references a fellow by the name of Hugo Gernsback. Do you know who Hugo Gernsback is?
Of the Cape Cod Gernsbacks?
The same.
I went to school with Hugo Gernsback's cousin, Aloysius.
Aloysius Gernsback?
Aloysius Gernsback. And then, of course, their mysterious uncle lived on that big house up at the top of the hill.
Oh, yeah.
Tiberius Gernsback.
He was married to Gurney Gernsback, wasn't he?
That's right. That's right. Mabel Gurney Gernsback.
They called her that because when she asked for
because it was short for her last name.
That's right.
A lot of people don't know that.
Hugo Gernsback, you know this guy. I didn't know I knew this guy, but we both know this guy. This is the guy they call the father of science fiction.
The Hugos.
He's the Hugo Award guy.
The Hugo Awards.
Yes, Hugo Gernsback.
There's a real Hugo. That makes sense.
Yeah. I had no idea about this dude.
I mean, there isn't a real Oscar, so it's like...
Yeah, he founded in 1965. I guess it's earlier than that. He founded the Amazing Stories, which was the first
Amazing
science fiction
Stories
magazine. Yes.
Yeah.
And the first
which
issue
they turned
of,
into a movie.
Yes. Starring
it was
Steven
an anthology
Spielberg.
Movie that was based on the stories from the magazine.
The first issue of that magazine had stories by H.G. Wells, Jules Verne, and Hugo Gernsback.
Hugo Gernsback, the most famous of them all.
Yeah. He evidently was a notorious sleazeball.
Hell yeah, dude.
He said, this is a quote on his Wikipedia page. Gernsback's venality and corruption, his sleaziness, and his utter disregard for the financial rights of authors have been well documented. The founder of the genre of science fiction, who gave his name to the field's most prestigious award, was pretty much a crook.
But that's how it works, right? That's how it works. You get these people who are like, they've got these terrible reputations or whatever. Yeah. And then it's like, oh, well, I'll start a charity, or I'll start a humanitarian award, or I'll start. So Hugo Gernsback started the Hugo Awards because he's like, see, I care about authors.
I don't think he started the awards. He didn't start them.
I'm not going to pay them, but I'll give them a statue once a year. Is that what happened?
No, he didn't start the awards. They were just named after him.
So why would they name them after him?
Well, because he basically started the genre.
If we don't like him, name it after H.G. Wells.
Believe me, I don't know how it got named that, but it's because he started the first magazine. He wanted to call it. this is the difference between you and me. If you and I were back then, you'd be like, you should call it science fiction. And I would have argued what Hugo Gernsback argued, which he wanted it to be called scientification.
Not everything's got to be a portmanteau.
I know.
I'm going to tell Hugo the same thing that I tell you every fucking day, dude. Every fucking day for 15 years, for as long as I've known you, you don't have to make everything a portmanteau.
God, I love a portmanteau.
We all love a portmanteau, but just you can't force it.
Yeah. So he coined the term in 1916. In 1929, the first preface for Science Wonder Stories, he used the term science fiction.
They call
him the father
stories.
Of science fiction. Total sleazebag. He stiffed his writers while paying himself $100,000 a year as the president.
In 1916?
Yeah. President of Gernsback Publications. This is 1952.
Oh, 1952.
Still, $100,000 is a lot of money.
Dude, $100,000?
Yeah.
Dude's the Elon Musk of 1952.
Totally. Total dirtbag. But, you know, the biggest award in the field is named after him. That is not the reason I wanted to bring him up. That's not the reason he's brought up in this article.
Jeff, we've got to lock in.
I know. Let's lock in. The reason
we've got to lock in today.
The reason Hugo Gernsback is brought up in this article is because he also has 80 patents He was an inventor as well.
Was he an inventor or was he a thief? Is this an Edison situation?
No, he's an inventor of shit that no one wants.
Oh, okay.
And so he invented he got a patent in 1925.
July 1925. Name your three favorite patents of 1925.
Well, this is going to be one of them, I'll tell you that. It's called the isolator. And okay. It's literally a way to block out all of the distractions and do your work. And you know what it is, Anthony?
It's an Austin Powers cone, isn't it?
It is way better than an Austin. This is a diving bell for working. It is a wooden helmet.
Yes.
A wooden helmet that has two tiny little glass holes cut out of it with glass in them.
Yeah.
I got to show you the picture of this. It's so incredible.
I think I'm picturing it.
Oh, search for the isolator on Wikipedia. It has its own article, the isolator does.
Okay.
He deemed it 75% efficient, but his initial design that he patented, he said you could only wear it for 15 minutes at a time, and then he ended up adding oxygen tank so you wouldn't suffocate.
Oh dear!
There it is. It's a true horror. I mean,
he looks like, I mean, if you remove,
he looks like a minion.
If you remove the oxygen tank, he looks like a minion. He looks like a some sort of cartoon henchman of some kind. First of all, it looks like a hilariously giant beanie cap.
Yeah. It looks like
Mushmouth
from Fat Albert.
Yeah, it's a beanie, like a hipster beanie that goes over the entire head.
Yeah.
The width of the shoulders. It even has like the little lip of the beanie at the bottom.
Yeah.
But then the two pieces of glass, I was picturing two large windows.
No.
They're cartoon eyeballs.
Yeah, they're tiny. Yeah.
And
it looks
and
horrible.
Then in the front is literally just like a little hole. It looks like a Furby face. It's got two eyes and then a little round nose. And then out of the little round nose, which would be the Furby beak, is a place to connect your oxygen tank to do your work at your desk. Which to me is like, hey, Hugo, just like you've got $100,000 in 1952 or 25 or whatever it is, just tell your assistant not to let anyone in.
Yeah, I guess.
But
cut out all the distractions. He said it was only 75% efficient, and then he had a new design that was 90. He said 90 to 95% efficient, but you can only work for 15 minutes. That is made out of wood. Can you imagine how heavy that must be?
That's so wild. And then he covered it in fabric? That's crazy.
So he
also
said,
on his desk, I want to say, like, you can see, like, over on his desk, he's got one of those things that lets you see pictures in 3D.
Oh, yeah.
From the early 1900s.
Viewmatic or whatever they're called.
Yeah, where you've got, like, the two pictures, one for each eye. He's got one of those over there. He's got a bunch of, let me tell you something. If you want to know what to get Hugo Gernsback for Father's Day, he wants a desk toy. He wants an executive desk toy.
Yeah, he loves them. He loves them. He said that the isolator in 1925, he said an isolator was a great investment. It had disappeared by 1926. Only 11 of them were created.
Can't imagine why.
All right. So as far back as then, my point and the point of this article is that people were concerned about keeping out distractions, right? 1925, this guy's like, there's too many distractions. I got all these desk toys. There's probably children around at some place, a dog barking down the street.
Sure.
It's a problem. Dogs in the street in 1925. This is constantly.
Oh yeah, it's because you threw your trash out the window.
That's right. All right. So, tangent achieved.
Okay. Hey,
how do we
tangent to your tangent?
Uh huh.
Here on the day when we lock in.
Lock-in day.
It's lock-in day, everybody. There was a 2017 invention based on the isolator called the Helm Fawn.
Oh, the Helm Fawn. It looks like a big, a big football helmet.
It does look like a big football helmet. It's equipped with a microphone, Bluetooth connection, and a camera.
Sure.
And you have virtual meetings in the Helm phone, I guess it is. Helm
phone. F-O-N, yeah.
Yeah. Really lock in there.
Hugo, you know, Hugo's, his legacy lives on not just, oh, there's a Batman version. Did you see that go by?
There was a Bat, yeah. He came up with a bunch of different different mock-ups.
Little Batman ears on it.
You'd be a little, have a little whimsical one.
All right. So how do we measure attention span? Well, one of the ways we do it in the laboratory is we get volunteers, very poorly paid volunteers, to do extremely tedious tasks.
Right.
And one of them, the most, I think the most famous of them, is called the D2 task.
The Mighty Ducks?
Yeah. Yes. You get Emilio Estevez to come in.
That's right.
And you could ask him, how many Emilio Estevez movies can you name? And people only can do D2, and that's it. That's the only
that's
one
it.
You can do.
Because it's the best one.
Best one. No, the D2 task is really ridiculous. It's lowercase d's and lowercase p's. So, you know, basically like inverted of each other. And they have little slash marks either above and below them. And it's just a page full of that. And you're only supposed to circle the lowercase d that has slash marks below it.
Okay.
Page after page after page. So it's just tedium.
Right.
Because it's like, you know, it's hard to distinguish. You have to really focus in order to distinguish between the D and the P and the slashes above and below. And is there one slash or two slashes? So it's basically severance, like the job at severance is what we're
right.
asking people to do.
We're macro data refining.
Yeah, exactly. And we've actually, we've conducted D2 tests for decades. This is a known test that has been done for decades. And there was a meta-analysis of D2 tests in 2024 that compiled 21,000 people's D2 tests from 32 countries between 1990 and 2021.
Okay.
And the results were, yeah, there's the D2 test. Look at that. That is just, I'm getting a headache just looking at it.
Yeah, this sucks.
Sucks, right? 21,000 people from 1990 to 2021 had to do that crap. And they showed that over that period of time, there's basically no difference in how children scored on the D2 test.
Okay.
And for adults, there's actually a slight improvement over time.
Hmm.
So if you're using that as your metric for attention span, focused attention on something really hard that you actually have to focus on to accomplish, adults are actually getting a little better, children are getting no worse. So that's kind of...
So more TikTok.
More TikTok.
More TikTok.
More TikTok. Well, here's the problem.
Shorter TikToks and more of them.
The problem is that it's not our capacity for attention that is changing. It is our habits around attention that are changing. So there's this woman named Gloria Mark, who's been for 20 years, she's been doing the same study. She's a psychologist at UC Irvine.
Hey, right down the street.
That's right. And she has been basically monitoring attention spans for people at work in the office environment. Yeah, that kind of office. And you know what's crazy? The side note. Again, locked in, but little side note.
Yeah, we're locked in.
When you say she's been doing this for 20 years, that's 2006, dude. It's hard for
yeah.
me to, when you go, she's been doing this for 20 years. I'm like, oh yeah, 2006. It's 2006 is when she started.
Yeah. We were all talking about Lost.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So she has been monitoring with digital tracking, with direct observation, with surveys. She's been monitoring the average duration of attention on a single task at work for people's work environment.
Wow, what a great time to get into that field.
It's like perfect timing, right? Right before the iPhone comes out.
You could not have known. You could not have predicted. I mean, the iPhone, social media, streaming media, like,
yeah,
it was all starting right then.
Yeah.
Oh, if you were going to look at the breakdown of the human mind, you know.
She picked the right year, baby.
Oh, she got in. Yeah. She got in good. You know, some of it, they say some of it is, you know, is picking a job you love. Some of it is picking a job that is known to have, you know, a need for people.
Yeah.
But some of it, Jeff, some of success is just right place, right time.
Serendipity, baby. Yeah.
That's right.
She just did it. Or maybe she found a weird hatch on an island and went back in time and...
Yeah.
That could have been it, too.
She was like, why do we keep putting these numbers into this computer?
That's right.
Just let it go.
Anyway, so she says that in 2006, when she started, workers spent about 2.5 minutes on average on a dedicated screen task before switching.
Switching to what? Snood? It was 2006, right? Probably right. Snood.
Before they, you know, put on Winamp.
Yeah.
I don't know. Before they downloaded some stuff on Napster. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. By 2010, this was down to about 75 seconds. And in the early 2020s, down to about 47 seconds.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Because there's other stuff coming in now.
That's right. Well, this is...
There's other stuff coming in all the time.
This isn't even like switching away from work, or it's just like changing from one tab to another, checking your email. It's you could still even be doing work, quote unquote.
Yeah.
It's just switching from one thing to another thing. Which, as we know, is the biggest impediment to sustained productivity is just switching tracks, because then you have to sort of rev back up. We've talked about this before. We talked about the thing, I don't know, a long time ago. We talked about the thing, the study about even having your cell phone in your pocket, even if it's off, like affects your attention because the knowledge that it's there.
Yes, because it's habitual knowledge.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. It's like when I wake up on vacation and think that I have to walk my dog.
Yes. Right. It's just knowing that you have to do it, knowing that it's possible. Putting the phone in a different room is different than putting it in your pocket.
Yeah. My dog's not even there at the hotel with me.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And so her hypothesis is that, you know, you have this our brains value novelty. They value a break in the monotony. And so just having the ability to switch between things, even if you're at work and you know you got to do the TPS reports, but maybe there's an email from a different department that you've been waiting on. Let's check that. It's not even that you're not working. It's not that you're, you know, tabbing over to Pornhub. It's that you're just switching gears of work, which affects your productivity.
Do you think, and this is my question to you, because I don't think anything has ever proven that you've never really worked in an office more than you think the two things that people could be doing at work are working or being on Pornhub?
I don't know. I don't have a real job.
There's probably nothing in between that. It's probably you're either working or you're on Pornhub.
That's why they have the cubicles, right?
That's right. So nobody can see the porn. It's just their decency barriers.
That's right. It's a respect
is what
thing.
They are.
It's a respect. I respect my coworkers.
It's a respect thing. It's, you know, we all know that if you're not working, you're looking at porn, because those are the two states of humanity.
That's right. Yeah. So, you know, there's all these studies referenced here as well about how, you know, it's hard if you hear, you know, to focus if you hear a baby crying or a dog barking or horns honking, or like external distractions are difficult to work through. But she says that people are as likely to self-interrupt as they are to be interrupted.
And that, baby, tell me all about it.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Doc. Sing me a song.
But that doesn't prove that our brains are actually changing. It just means that our habits around them are changing, that we have access to more novel types of distraction. Yeah.
And I guess the question that comes in then is, if it's functionally no different than having a shorter attention span, are we splitting hairs? Right.
You know, that was my question as well. And I think the difference is the hair that we're splitting is there's no cognitive impairment. There's no right. nothing preventing you from having a longer attention span. Your brain isn't actually changing. If you decide to change the habit or create a circumstance where the distractions are minimized, then you can actually sustain your attention for longer.
You can get it back. But
right.
I guess my thing is if it is a habit and it's an ingrained habit, we're talking about two different root causes for essentially the same behavior.
Yeah, but this article gets to some strategies for how to combat the habit. Before we get there, though, another interesting aspect of it is there's a study, I think we've talked about this as well, where they actually are able to measure gray matter density in the frontal cortex. And there seems to be some correlation between a density of gray matter and your ability to focus, your ability to have extended attention span.
And that's why it's all loosey-goosey up here.
That's right. But they don't know. I mean, there's some speculation.
My gray matter density, I was told once, I had an fMRI taken.
Yeah.
And they said, not unlike cotton candy.
Which is we know the densest of candies.
And I was like, that's pretty good, right? And they're like, yes. Yes, it is. Good for you. Good for you. Are you even still hearing this? And I was like, what?
Sorry, I was checking my phone real quick.
Yeah.
There's some speculation that that might mean that it could actually be worked out like a muscle and that you could actually gain density by working on it. The craziest thing about this is that nobody is, because fMRIs are so expensive, we're only really getting a snapshot of individual brains at individual times. And what you want is like an fMRI over the same person for an extended period of time. So you can see if that is actually deteriorating or changing or, you know, but we're just not doing that because it's cost prohibitive.
Right.
It's difficult to get subjects to do that. And even when you do that, it's like, well, what are all the factors that could have contributed to the change? Is it society and cell phones, or is it this person's eating something weird? You know, who knows?
Yeah, it's not easy. It's also not easy to walk around with an fMRI on your head.
No, not easy. No,
not, you look like, not, you know,
you look like Doc Brown in that one scene with the strainer on his head, you know?
That's right. Yeah. You got to wheel around the cart with you and stuff.
Yeah.
It's not easy. I think that's the biggest problem that we have with a lot of brain studies and a lot of brain activity studies is just like, we can only get slices, and we can only get slices in isolated, special, specific conditions.
Right.
Right.
That's exactly
right. It's tough to get natural brain activity during a natural part of the day.
Right.
You're already, by the fact that the subject is sitting down to an fMRI, you're already changing everything.
Yeah.
About the way they're thinking.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So what is there to do? We kind of don't know.
TikTok.
Much of it.
Wordle.
What is there to do?
There's a lot to do.
Seriously, what do we do? Like, I'm so bored.
What do we do? Like, yeah, like, we've been talking about this for like minutes. I'm losing it.
I thought we were locked in, but no.
Oh, shit. That's right. We were locking in. I'm sorry. I'm locked in.
So it turns out the best thing you can do, like anything else, it
seems. Be yourself?
No, never be yourself. Always be someone else. Be someone better than you.
Okay.
Incentives are the key.
Mm-hmm.
Incentives. It turns out that putting goals on things, or even when you reward someone for, like, if your pay structure is based on accuracy, it turns out your attention gets real fucking good. You know what I mean?
It turns out I quit.
Yeah.
It turns out I'm fired.
But
that's what it turns out.
Yeah, I know. But it does actually positively impact attention span if you tie rewards to it. So even if it's not like a financial reward, you can, mm-hmm. You can sort of artificially inflate the value of a task by, you know, creating accountability, creating competition, yeah. creating like any kind of goal structure that includes, you know, that forces you to actually prioritize attention will actually work.
Yeah. There's a thing with ADHD where the most motivating thing is a deadline.
Yeah.
And it has to be a real deadline. It can't be a deadline that you set for yourself because that's not real.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very interesting because it's really the only thing that works for me. Last week I had to go and I was working on a gig that was out of town. I had to leave home for a couple days. And knowing that I had to leave home the next day, all of a sudden, my ADHD was like, here are all the things we have to get done.
Yeah, yeah.
And we got to do them. We got to do them immediately.
Because there was no changing that. There's no way for you to go, maybe I'm not leaving home tomorrow. You know?
Right.
It is. It's happening. So it has to happen.
It has to happen. But the thing that sucks about ADHD is that's negative incentivizing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And negative incentivizing is really the only kind of incentivizing that works for me. I can't promise myself a little treat at the end of the day. I can't promise it just doesn't work because it feels false. It has to be somebody else has to be dependent on me.
That's interesting.
It has to be an external.
Yeah.
Thing that I have no control over.
Because you'll even always let yourself down.
Yeah, like that's easy. That's fine.
Yeah.
Like that's just me. Like yeah. I can always renegotiate with me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I can always be like, sorry, me. Let's just pick it back up and do it again from one, me.
Yeah.
You know, there was even a period of time where there were those apps that were popular where if you don't do something on time, it would like take money from you and give it to charity or take money yeah. from you. You know, you remember right. those?
Or like, yeah, tweet out your weight to everybody or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Like all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And buddy, I just gave a lot of money to charity. That's what happened. Because I'd be like, what is it? $5? Okay. So I missed the deadline. $5. And yeah. it goes to a good cause. Who gives a shit? Yeah. Like, it's so tough for me to
yeah.
do the incentivizing part.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's tough. It's tough.
The other thing,
and when people are like, that's the best thing. That's the best thing for it. That's the thing that works the best. I'm like, shit, I'm fucked. I'm double fucked. That's the thing that's best for it?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, you can also like tune out distractions and, you know,
sure.
you isolate yourself, get yourself one of those sweet.
Get yourself an isolator.
Wooden helmets.
Yeah.
But the other thing that, you know, they end this article, or David Adam ends this article on, which I think is another thing that may provide a little positive hope, a little silver lining at the end, is there also seems to be a connection between having your mind wander, losing attention, and creativity.
That's right.
So like your brain kind of needs to fuck off a little bit, you know, and those things actually can end up being very positive to your well-being and your creativity and your ability to then come back with a renewed ability to think of the problem in a new light, you know?
Yeah, you could just think of it that way. It's good for creativity. It's bad for punctuality. it's bad for responsibility.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bad for the bank account, if I can be honest. It's pretty bad in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But think about it this way. soul of artist. Does that help? Does it help?
I hope.
That helps, right? Soul of artist. Yeah. Doesn't that sound nice? Doesn't that feel better? Soul of artist.
Also, from now on, I'm going to think of the Hugo Awards completely differently, you know?
Right. They should give away those helmets.
That would be incredible. That's the award you win is an isolator for you.
You get an isolator and it's like, good luck. Now go write something even better.
Don't
get an even bigger isolator. If you win again, we'll give you oxygen for it. You're an ADHD person. Does giving yourself little treats work?
No.
No. See, that's the thing. This is good. This is good advice for people who don't have our particular problem.
Yeah.
I think for the majority of the population, this is good advice, is like the incentivizing.
You know what's even worse?
Because you probably even do it with your kids, right? It's like the easiest thing to do. It's just like, hey, if you can just lock the fuck in for 2 hours and do your homework, we'll go get the giant $30 Mormon cookies.
Oh, dude, we just have Hershey Kisses in our house. Wonders for my daughter. A Hershey Kiss is like the greatest thing she can imagine. Like you cleaned up your room, Hershey Kiss, you know?
Dude, wait until she has good chocolate.
Yeah. the worst part for me, Anthony, is that sometimes the negative reinforcement doesn't work if it's not bad enough.
Yes.
100%. Like I can let people down a little bit.
A little bit. Because people understand.
People are nice.
People are nice and they understand, and I don't let them down all the time.
I didn't get back to you. Sorry, I didn't get back to you.
No, I'm mostly good at it. Mostly.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't get back to you, but I had crippling ADHD and I literally couldn't make that call. Like, I did everything else in my life except make that call.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you look back and you go on like the last year and you go, uh-oh, I've been less good than I thought.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Yeah. Turns out I'm doing this more often than not. Uh-oh. Yeah. Letting people down a little bit turns into uh-oh.
I used to joke that I needed to have, you know how you can, in Gmail, you can have an automatic signature that gets put on every email. I used to say I want to have an automatic header on every email that says, sorry it took so long to get back to you.
Yes.
Just automatically on every email.
100%. God, man, it's tough. It's tough. Listen, if you're not an ADHD type, and you are the sort of person where all of this research actually is about you. If this research is actually pertinent to you, it's good to know that attention spans aren't getting shorter.
Yeah.
But hey, every once in a while, think of your friends out there in the foxholes, your ADHD friends. Yeah. We're out there letting you down all day, and buddy,
right.
It's tough.
It is.
It ain't easy to let you down all day.
We're suffering more than you are. We promise.
I promise you. I feel so guilty all the time.
Oh yeah. Oh, it's the worst.
It's not
motivating enough, but it's the worst.
It's not motivating enough until it's way too late, and then you're like, well, to do it now would be embarrassing.
That's exactly right.
To respond to the email now would be simply embarrassing.
Yeah. Maybe we'll both forget this ever happened.
Yeah. You blink and it's been 7 weeks since you've responded to the email, and you're
that's
like,
right.
I don't think that's something that person needs to know anymore.
That's right. That's right.
They've probably moved on. They're probably not even at that job anymore. Shit.
Can I tell you one that I know we're rapping, but I want to tell you what this is literally just happened to me. I got sent a screener for a movie. I'm not going to say what movie. It's very obscure. I got sent a screener for a movie and I watched like the first 20 minutes of it and I didn't like the movie. And the PR guy reached out to me and was like, hey man, did you have a chance to watch the movie? And I couldn't bring myself to respond. And literally every day I think about it. And now it's been weeks and now I can't respond and I never will respond. And it literally has hurt my relationship with that PR. I'm certain of it, but like I can't, and now I really can't.
Yeah. You can't do it. You can't do it.
Yeah.
And it's like, and this, you, like you're saying, this is a totally different episode. This is more of our ADHD, our separate podcast about ADHD.
That's right.
That we have to do. But yeah, there is that thing where it's like, if you just did the thing, it's a 5-minute thing.
Oh, easiest thing in the world.
Yeah, man, I watched it. It's not really my thing.
Not for
but,
me.
You know,
yeah, I appreciate you sending it, but I didn't enjoy it. Couldn't bring myself to type that.
Yeah, not my thing, but you know, I always love the stuff that you guys do, and you know, be sure to send me the next thing.
Yeah.
Nope. That's 2 minutes. Didn't do it.
Literally wrote it down to do as on a to-do list.
No,
couldn't do
it. That doesn't matter.
It's pathetic.
It's gone. It's over. Lee, can I tell you? There's one box that has three things in it that's been sitting in my living room. I know what the three things are. I know where they go. There's a place for the three things.
Yeah.
And I always look at the box and I go, it's not box time. It's not box time right now. Box time is later.
That's right. But the craziest thing is how much effort and stress it takes up. It hurts.
I can see the box from the couch while I'm watching TV.
And you hate it, right? You hate that it's still there, but you can't bring yourself to do it.
It's three things in a box. I can tell you what they are.
What is wrong with us, man?
I'm not getting ADHD. That's why I take medication. Here's the thing. Here's the thing that's been helping me lately. Are you ready? This is for people who this study does not apply to, who've maybe been listening to the episode and have been like, yeah, I'm like Anthony and Jeff. I keep meaning to lock into this episode. I keep rewinding this podcast 3 minutes at a time. I know who you are. We're not made. Listen, you can't read an audiobook. You can't. I know who you are. The Cube.
Oh, what's The Cube? Oh, The Cube.
The Cube. It has timer on it.
Nice.
Every side is different timer. 5 minute, 10 minute, 30 minute, 60 minute.
Works for you?
Works for me.
Yeah.
You just, because you don't even have to like set numbers. You just turn on Cube. And when you put the Cube down, whatever side is up is what the timer's set for. And I just do like little 10, 15 minute sprints of things that I got to do throughout the day.
You're locked
you
in
could
Cube.
Probably, you could get a kitchen timer. You could do it with anything. Yeah. I just have Cube.
I think part of it is how cool the Cube looks.
It is part of it.
Yeah.
That is part of it for me. It can't just be a timer on my phone.
Right.
Must be Cube.
Has to be cool.
Cube.
Yeah.
The Cube is physical thing.
Yeah.
Cube is separate from phone.
Right, right.
Cube go on table. Cube start.
Have to respect the Cube.
You got to respect the Cube, dog. You got to lock in and you got to respect the Cube. Those are two things that you got to know. If you want to pay attention today, there are two things you need to know. You got to lock the fuck in and you got to respect the fucking Cube, dog.
I hope we've helped some people here today.
I feel like I've only just disappointed myself.
Yeah. Well, that's par for the course.
So yeah. We hope that we've helped you because we have definitely disappointed ourselves by thinking about our true natures. And you should never do that.
Never. But you can help us by becoming patrons to We Have Concerns by going to patreon.com/wehaveconcerns. If there is any part of this that was interesting or useful, maybe throw a little value our way. You know, just $1 a month gets you access to the Discord where cool folks are posting stories like this and others that we don't have time to do on the show, but they're still cool and interesting. And for more than $1 a month, you get even more cool things. Q&A.
That's right. You could get bonus episodes. You get early episodes. You get video versions of the episodes. You get everybody's getting Cubes. That's not true. But, you know. It is the one and only way that we support the show and keep the show going. So we really appreciate everybody that's been helping us out. And we just appreciate you listening. But if you have the money and you have the inclination, head to patreon.com/wehaveconcerns. And then you get Cube 2, Hypercube.
We're going to work up to isolation.